This is the Karima Brown Show. You are listening to 702. Now, the Congress of South African Trade Unions has called on the ANC to use the party's lekgotla to fulfill the assurances it gave thousands of supporters at its manifesto launch last weekend. The lekgotla follows the ANC's National Executive Committee meeting in Irene outside Pretoria at the weekend and is the first one for the year. And it sets the tone very much for what also will be in the State of the Nation address that President Ramaphosa will deliver in February. The lekgotla is a gathering of the governing party, its alliance partners, to take stock of urgent priorities and to help guide the work of ANC officials deployed in the government in the year ahead. The aim of the meeting was to compile a plan of action to put into practice the commitment made on January 8th and the party's election manifesto. While you heard last night that we spoke with the party's acting spokesperson, Mr. Dakota Lekgotla, on the outcomes of the gathering. Tonight, we get the views of the worker-led federation, COSATU, that is part of the African National Congress Tripartite Alliance. Mr. Sizwe Pamla, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Good evening to you and good evening to all listeners.
Now, Mr. Pamla, we understand that one of the issues that dominated the lekgotla was, of course, the fact that the experts at ESCOM gave the lekgotla a plan of how they going to turn matters around. But just in the news, you would have heard that unions such as NUM and NUMSA are already gearing up for the fact that people could possibly be retrenched. When you were at the lekgotla, did the plan that was put in front of you regarding the turnaround of ESCOM involve job losses beyond managerial job losses? We know the management has been trimmed down from 22 to 9, but did it include having to let some people go?
Well, in terms of our understanding, of course, when they were presenting the plan, they were making the same old statements that they've been making to say they will do everything possible to avoid job losses. Mm. Now, that's not what we want to hear, especially when we are talking about unbundling an entity as big as that. And especially when in doing so, you are going to be working very closely with the consultants. Mm. And you're also going to be working very closely because one of the proposals is that for ESCOM to survive, government needs to explore public-private partnerships.
Mm.
Now, we know that as soon as you say that, we've heard and seen that before. So we made it very clear in that meeting. In fact, we were waiting for the statement at 2 o'clock because in our discussions we made it very clear to the ANC that this is something that will force us to break ranks. Mm. In fact, we had told them that we are going to wait for you to communicate your statement out, and then we'll respond to it. And you'll have noticed that what they did was to say the minister has to go back to consult labor.
Mm.
So they avoided communicating that and said the minister needs to go back to labor. So we are going to allow that process to unfold of consultation and hope that as when that consultation takes place, they will be doing that with the intention to factor in some of our views. Because if they will not be factoring those views, then we'll have to take a position.
Now, Mr. Pamla, the Team South Africa is at Davos. President Ramaphosa was live on most television stations in South Africa today, speaking about our investment plan and, of course, also saying that South Africa is ready for investment. You were saying that there's something worrying, though, when you consider that in between you have had the so-called Team South Africa. We are interested to hear what the Davos rhetoric is about because it's intended to misinterpret the manifesto, not interpret it. Why are you so suspicious of what Team South Africa is going to be saying to investors there? When you heard the president this afternoon explaining, for example, the issue on the Reserve Bank, that its independence is sacrosanct, but that, for example, with the 29 financial crisis, the finance minister communicated with the Reserve Bank to take issues such as unemployment into consideration. The president said the same thing. He also spoke extensively about land expropriation without compensation and how it's going to work and bringing more people into the economy. Now, if those are the messages of the president, what about that makes you uncomfortable and suspicious that the manifesto is being misinterpreted instead of interpreted?
Well, Dr. Karima, we should remember that Davos, that ski resort, is really a place where the global elite go to reinforce each other's spending positions on neoliberalism, meaning that there's nothing that is going to come out of Davos. We've never expected Davos to say anything different. Mm. If Davos made sense, we wouldn't be where we are now as South Africa. But also the Oxfam report that just came out yesterday, not yesterday, a couple of days ago, I think the day before yesterday, that came out showing that the inequality is rising. Now, the question is to be asked, what is it that they've been discussing at Davos over these years that has changed anything for the poor majority? Nothing, because when they do this annual pilgrimage, It is to go and really put each other on the back and remind each other that they are still in charge of the direction of the globe and that there is no alternative socialist or even economic model in theory that can challenge the free market. Mm-hmm. That is really what they go there because. If you look at the issue of unemployment in South Africa, of course, it is a big crisis, but it is a global phenomenon.
Mm.
The issue of unfair world trade, all of these trade agreements that Donald Trump himself has been tearing them apart, they've been worse for third world and developing economies. I mean, you look at AGOA, what we've been subjected to as an economy. You look at the steel tariffs that we've been subjected to. You look at the misuse of science and the ecological ruin that we've seen in developing countries. No one is going to be talking about that at Davos. No one is going to be talking about how do we bring in this mechanization and automation, but at the same time, we take care of the people who are going to be displaced. So those are the issues that we would have expected people in Davos to talk about. Knowing that that's what they're going to talk about, and listening to what the Team SA has been saying with regards to really talking about where they to attract investment, you can bet on one thing that the message they are sending there is that the investment that they are attracting from outside, it means that they are going to repeat everything that we've been saying over the last 5 years. For an example, in 2012, we cut corporate tax from 34% to 28% to attract investment. Mm. Nothing has changed. And we cautioned against that. Now, what it means is that if they are still going back after all that they've done to attract investment, it means they are going to offer more instead of saying, look, this doesn't work. We need to change tech. What we suspect they are going to do is that they are going to say, let's see what is it that we can offer, especially when it comes to SOEs, because we know that the advice they've been getting from the World Bank, from the IMF, and everywhere else was that you should let go of the SOEs.
Mm.
Now, we have been listening to the president himself trying to look at the wording, the right wording that is not going to upset the working class, but at the same time, the language that is going to send for certain messages to the investors to say, we are looking at different ways of doing things. We are looking at ways of reorientating these SOEs and making sure that we turn them around. At the same time, when he talks about that, he doesn't want to commit that they are going to continue to be under government control.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Pamela, I accept your critique of the government's engagement at Davos and that they go there to kind of pat each other on the back, and they look at making capitalism more palatable. And the reality is that capitalism isn't delivering. I understand that. But what I don't understand is that it's not just the African National Congress that is involved in this. You have hundreds of trade union representatives sitting on boards of investment companies, development finance institutions, and so on, to try and re-anchor the economy. We've even had quite a lot of allegations of corruption against union members, individual union members of affiliates of COSATU being implicated. In the case of PUSASA, it's Pop Crew. In the case of the Guptas, it was NUM. In the case of PUSASA, it's been SATAU and SEPAL, a whole range of unions. You have not been untouched by state capture. It's not as if the sins of incumbency has only been visited on the on the governing party. In fact, if one looks at your investment vehicle, you know, it's bankrupt. So what responsibility are you taking? A lot of your unions have imploded because they are fighting over their investment vehicles, for example. How are you going to take responsibility for cleaning up your act so that you have some moral standing to at least have a decent argument with the African National Congress?
Well, Karima, if you go back to what COSATU has been doing over the last three and a half years, when we came out of the Special National Congress, it's COSATU that actually came out and after the 12th National Congress. It came out and outlined the internal challenges, including our own reports. We came out, the first CC of COSATU that discussed Kopanopimatle.
Yeah.
We actually put everything out there and say, this is what we've discovered at Kopanopimatle.
Yeah, and what's happened to the people at Kopanopimatle? Have you laid charges against them, for example? Have they appeared in court on charges of corruption or fraud?
Yes, I'm actually trying to get there. When we came out and then we identified that there was this looting and corruption that was taking place, we then said we appointed a trust, because initially the CEC had wanted to act and take over and say, this is how we were going to intervene. And the advice that we received was that Kopanopimatle had liabilities, Kopanopimatle needed a trust. We could not operate Kopanopimatle as a trade union federation without appointing a trust. The first thing that we did was to dismiss all members of the trust who had previously there, and we appointed new members. And we then had to get guidance from our legal team, but at the same time get guidance from the business sector as to how to manage the process of ensuring that we clean up, we find out what went wrong. We appointed a team of investigators to investigate, and the investigation is ongoing. We have received the initial report that shows us what is it that has gone wrong. We have prepared all of the paperwork so that as and when we are ready, we can then give an instruction to that trust to say, we think that we have enough evidence to open a case. And then, because at the end of the day, which is something that we had to learn at that particular time, was that whatever is it, if we do not follow all of the guidance and the proper protocol that we needed to follow, whatever was going to happen, for example, COSATU was going to have to take
Mr. Pamla, we're running out of time. Unfortunately, it's 9 o'clock. I've got to cross to the news. But we will come back to you and take you up on the offer to see what your report says about corruption and, more importantly, what you are going to do to sanction your own members. That's Sizwe Pamla from COSATU. It's just gone 9 o'clock. It's time for Eyewitness News.